Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on air. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome. It's a continuation, really, of what I was doing for the last 2 hours, except there's an Irish twist in this one. All of the music that you will hear on the programme will be Irish. It's our new home for the Irish programme, live on air Wednesday evening between 6 and 7. Now, the last 2 hours was kind of hectic and frenetic. It always is when you're not at base. But anyway, here we go. Let's get ourselves... I've changed the hats. The Irish hat is now on. Yeah, the green one, that's the one. I started featuring artists on the programme, and I asked you a number of weeks ago if you would like to suggest an artist or a group or whatever to feature on the programme. Now, the programme is only an hour long, so we'll get two songs in from each of the artists that we feature, maybe three on a slow week, but we'll try and keep it to two if we can. And Giles Brown, or Giles, suggested that I play Thin Lizzy. So, yep, we're going to feature Thin Lizzy on the programme today, and I know that there are many Lizzy fans out there. Before I go and tell you what's happening on the programme, I got a text last week. It was on WhatsApp from Michael Carway, and Michael wanted me to play The Hill of Sweet Knocklin by PJ Lenehan. And Michael, I looked on YouTube, couldn't find it, and I looked on Spotify, I couldn't find it. I looked in my own collection, I don't have it, and in fact I couldn't find any copy of the song Sweet Knocklin. It's a Sligo song, I know that. I did find the words of the song. Yeah, there's plenty of information on the internet about the song. I found the words of them, which are lovely, but I don't have any copy of it. If anybody has a copy of it, would you send me an email copy of it? I'd be very thankful, and I'll play it for Michael anytime at all. The Hill of Sweet Knocklan, Knocklane. It's a Sligo song, so you never know. Some of our Sligo listeners might know where to get a copy of it, and I would suggest that PJ Lenehan might have a version somewhere along the line, and we might even try there. But anyway, sorry about that, Michael. Now, coming up on the programme this week, firstly, if you'd like to get in contact with me between now and 7 o'clock, I'd love to hear from you. +34 645 99 67 95 is the WhatsApp number, or you can send an email to me, studio@tre.radio or ger@tre.radio, whichever suits you. Alrighty, if it's during the programme, studio or my own one will do, but if it's after the programme, just stick it to me, ger@tre.radio. I have a fascinating character for you to meet, a man by the name of Jim Schofield. Jim is building a boat in his garage in Blessington in County Wicklow, and he hopes to have it finished in the next couple of weeks, and he hopes to sail across the Atlantic on his own, and that'll be a magnificent feat if he can achieve it, and hopefully he will. So I'll be introducing you to him in the second or third part of the programme, so looking forward to that conversation. Patricia, if you know the way that I work with Patricia Trainer, I go and I visit her regularly, and I record five or six stories with her, and then I kind of give them to you over a period of weeks. We haven't been able to do that in person because of COVID-19, but we did manage to have a couple of Zoom sessions, and I have a story from her, and I'm hoping I'm going to be able to get it in tonight and play it for you before 7 o'clock as well. Always interesting stories, and great delivery in it as well. So that's what we have, and I'll be playing the Irish number one for you on this very day back in 1969. So if you were living in Ireland, or if you were in Ireland now and you happen to be, you know, interested in the charts in 1969, the song that was playing, yeah, at number one spot, we'll be playing it on this programme between now and 7 o'clock. But first, let's take a track, shall we, from the wonderful Thin Lizzy.
Have took that last bus home, but I asked you for a dance. Now we go steady to the pictures. I always get chocolate stains on my pants, and my father, he's going crazy. He says I'm living in a trance, but I'm dancing in the moonlight. It's got me in the spotlight. It's all right. Dance.
dancing in the moonlight on this long hot summer night. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm on the streets again. I disobeyed another warning. I should have been in my tent. Now I won't get out till Sunday. I'll have to say I stayed with friends. Oh, but it's a habit worth forming if it means to justify the end. Dancing in the moonlight, it's got me in its spotlight. It's all dancing in the moonlight on this long hot summer night. And I'm walking home. The last bus is long gone. But I'm dancing in the moonlight.
I don't know whether you call him Phil Lynott or Phil Lynott, but that's Phil. Let's just say it's Phil and the lads from Thin Lizzy, Dancing in the Moonlight, the first of at least two tracks that we'll take on the programme today. And as I said, we dedicate them to Giles because he likes Thin Lizzy. So there you go. Giles, if you're listening, I hope that you enjoyed that. And I wish you a speedy recovery too. He's not feeling too well, so speedy recovery wished to you. Right, what else have I got to tell you? There is one big story in Ireland this week, and that is the report that was issued yesterday about the mother and baby homes. You've heard it on Talk Radio Europe. A number of people have mentioned it already. I mentioned it myself over the last couple of days. It's been big news since last weekend, and it's going to continue for another couple of days. So I'll get to that as soon as I possibly can. I was interested to hear on the 6 o'clock news that Boris Johnson is looking for 24/7 vaccination. Wow, that's interesting, because there's been a lot of criticism about the vaccination regime here in Ireland and how it's been, how we're going about it, and people saying that it's too slow and that it needs to be, you know, more money needs to be put into it, and we need to get more people vaccinated as quickly as possible. And I see yesterday that the Events Industry Association of Ireland has written to the Taoiseach to offer the industry's skills and resources to assist in planning the mass vaccination rollout. Elaine O'Connor, the co-founder of the representative group, said that the events industry has the relevant expertise to aid the rollout of mass vaccination centres across the country. She said it just makes sense. Yep, I suppose it does. We have thousands of people in the industry literally sitting around doing nothing because of lockdown. It's horrible to sit by knowing that there are many experts, so much infrastructure to roll this out very quickly. On Sunday, the association submitted a letter by email to Micheál Martin, Health Minister Stephen Donnelly, and Chief Medical Officer Dr. Tony Houlihan, and the HSE CEO Paul Reid. Interesting that somebody would come up with that notion. I suppose she doesn't have a snowball's chance of being included and invited, but it was nice that she took the initiative anyway. All right, let's take a quick break, shall we, and come back to me after that. You know what we'll do after that? Yeah, let's take a listen to that man I was telling you about. His name is Jim Schofield. I'll be talking to him just after this.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. It has been called Sailor's Perfect Pandemic Project and it's underway in Wicklow here in Ireland. An amateur sailor is building his own home boat, or his own boat at home, I should say, in County Wicklow to fulfil a lifelong dream of sailing solo across the Atlantic. His name is Jim Schofield and I'm glad to say he joins me on the phone right now. Jim, how are you?
Good afternoon, Ger. How are you?
I'm in top form, Jim. This story hit the airwaves on Monday evening and you've been inundated since then with requests to talk to people. You've become a celebrity.
That's a dangerous word, celebrity. Stay away from that. No, I've just become suddenly well known for being a semi-lunatic. It's kind of a midlife crisis gone very badly wrong. So celebrity is a long way to go. There's no money involved. So celebrities have to have money. So there's no money. It's just all for fun.
Let's start at the start. Where did your passion for sailing come from?
From reading books. I had a flatmate in Dublin a long time ago who was mad into sailing and he got me into it. Then I started reading all the greats. And I blagged my way onto a Glenanne's course in Baltimore and County Cork a long time ago.
Right.
Pretending I knew more than I actually knew. And then I came back to Dublin years and years ago and I bought a little boat and I sailed that around. And I still remember the first day, it's only a little 18-foot westerly, I sailed it out of Dunleary and down to around Muglands, which is just a mile or two south of Dunleary. It's a little lighthouse, around that lighthouse and back up.
Right.
And doctored up into it and I felt like Christopher Columbus. And I knew the boat had hit even then. So then, years passed, I bought and sold boats, families, marriage, jobs, come and go, and it was always on the back burner. So in the back of my head,
right,
I always wanted to do a transatlantic, especially a single-handed transatlantic, because all the greats I had read about, all my heroes, they had done a single-handed transatlantic. So I said, somewhere, sometime. And before I got married to my wife now, just be aware, somewhere, sometime, this is on the cards. Of course, she laughed it off.
Of course.
And now she's not laughing.
No, because the washing line had to be moved out of the garage. You're actually building this boat in the garage at home, yeah?
I am. It's a standard car garage. It's 20 foot long by, 10 foot wide.
Right.
But the boat is actually 19 foot long or 5.8 metres. So I needed room to move around it. So I took off the garage door and I built a quick extension from scrap timber. I begged, borrowed and stole timber all around the neighbourhood. And I built a 2 metre extension. So the bow of the boat is sticking out into the extension now. And I just have about a yard or a metre all around to walk around
right. And
work on it. So I'm tipping away at it.
When I saw you on television, I said, I've got to find this fella. And I Googled you. And
right.
I discovered that you're a photographer. That's your trade. That's what you do. That's how you make a living. So
that's exactly. That's my trade the last couple of years now. I'm doing corporate stuff, doing weddings. I love weddings, babies, right. Families, corporate gigs, headshots. If you pay me, I'll photograph it. Simple as that.
You're in a very quiet time. So with the lockdown, with no weddings,
absolutely.
No funerals, no gatherings. Everything
is stopped. Now, the boat thing just happened. I was... It was just last March or April, I was scouting around the internet and I saw this thing pop up. It's a fellow called Don McIntyre in Australia started this. He's organised lots of big races before, so he has a bit of a track history.
Okay.
And he came up with the idea of small boat, home-built race across the Atlantic. And then, if you still want the same boat, you can hold on to it and race it around the world in 2024.
Wow.
In a series of stages. But that's a whole different ballgame. So I thought about it for a while because I knew it was going to be a bit of work.
Right.
I built little boats before, canoes and small stuff, and I knew to go bigger and go better and go stronger is going to take time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I waited for a good 2 months before I took in my application and I bought the plans and then I bought the timber. And one day a guy arrived with a pile of plywood and I opened the shed door and we brought it in. And off you go.
You say you bought the plans and bought the timber. How much has this project cost you so far?
I don't want to go into too much detail, but let's just say it's the price of a really good secondhand car.
Okay, all right, that's fair enough. What did you know about building boats or building anything before you started on this?
I had built a 16-foot open boat about 20 years ago.
Okay.
So I knew the idea. I knew the principles, and I knew how to handle epoxy. And I was good at tools anyway, good at carpentry. I'm always fixing things and doing things. So that was an issue. But this boat has surprised me. I thought it's not simple. There's still a lot of tricky little bits, and you have to stop and look at it. So as part of the regulate, part of the thing about building the boat, you have to put up a blog. And the idea is you show your progress with photographs and videos. Okay. Every stage, there's maybe 5 or 6 or maybe 10 particular stages, and they want you to show the work you've done. So basically, there's no hiding, there's no cheating. You can't stick in a little engine in the back of the boat somewhere. Right. It has to be built according to spec, with the materials provided, with the materials assigned for it, and nothing else. There's no high tech carbon fibers. It's timber and marine plywood and epoxy and screws and stainless steel bolts, and that's it.
Wow, fascinating.
You know,
how was the blogging something new to you, or are you familiar with it, and are you online and so on?
I was online from the photography because I had a blog photography, and I had an Instagram account and a Facebook account just as a commercial thing. And I hadn't really done much personal stuff because this sounds great. I didn't want to expose myself too much.
Yeah, the shy retiring type. I can hear that.
And then look what happened. So the blog was for the building. Then I started a YouTube channel as a quick way of making videos and showing them and then adding those into the blog. And then before Christmas, I was fascinated by TikTok. I was watching TikTok. I was wasting too much time on TikTok. It is the most addictive, ridiculously addictive app ever invented. It's genius from that point of view. So I was stuck on TikTok. I thought, sure, I'll do a TikTok. And I was sitting on top of the boat one evening, fixing a bit of timber, and I put my phone in my pocket, and I pointed at myself, and I said what I was going to be doing.
Right.
And I hit post. And I thought, now I'm on TikTok. I'm great. I'm delighted.
Yeah.
Next morning, I don't know, I had 25,000 plus views on this 60-second video. An old guy in a shed with a grey beard building a boat. I thought, whoa, hang on a minute. So I just kept it. I do 2 or 3 TikTok. It's only like 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And I hit post. And the numbers grew and the comments grew. And now that first little 60-second post has over 95,000 views.
That's incredible.
I don't look sure who understands it. It's just the mania of social media. So that's how the whole thing took off. And a reporter heard about it and gave me a ring, and there you go.
And Bob's your uncle, as the fellow says.
Bob's your uncle, yeah.
I've seen this on television. Listeners to this program may not have done so, but we'll get your details shortly and they can follow your progress online. But when do you hope to have the boat in water?
My plan is to get the boat, to splash the boat, it says, in May, by May. I'm about halfway through, I think, from looking at it.
Right.
Give or take, maybe a slight, give or take halfway. So I started in mid-September. So if I get it in the water by mid-May, I'd be quite happy.
Good.
It might be June, but hopefully I'm going for May in my head. And I need the time to play around with it and sail it and get used to it.
Yeah.
And then the plan would be to get down to south of Portugal or south of Spain by October. And there's a little feeder race, like a little race to prove you can do it.
Right.
From I think south of Portugal to the Canary Islands.
Lovely.
That's a 600-mile single solo trip. And then we gather in the Canaries, all going well. And when the trade winds kick in November, we head off and somebody fires a gun and say, day, lads, and off you go across the Atlantic. And there we go.
What kind of a crew is going to go with ye? You have to have backup and you have to have support and you have to have health and safety. So how many boats do you think will be setting sail to go across the Atlantic in November?
Well, so far, I think there's about 15 or 20 people are building boats.
Right.
I'm the only one in Ireland at the minute. There's 3 or 4 guys in England. There's a lady in France building boats. There's guys in Australia, guys in the States. I think there's 1 or 2 in Spain as well.
We'll see if we can find them.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, go on a website called classglobe580.com. And that's the organising group. And you can see a builder's blog, and you can go down along that and see what country they're from. So I think there's a Spanish guy.
We'll have a look.
check it out. So statewide, we'll all have a life raft, an EPIRB, so that's an emergency position indicating beacon. So if all hell breaks loose, we hit the button and somebody will hear it.
Okay.
There may be a support boat, but if there is, they'd be a long way away because on the Atlantic, things tend to spread out, I believe.
They do. How long will it take you to do it, Jim?
We're reckoning the boat, it should do a minimum of 100 miles a day, 5 knots. So that's so at 3,000 miles, that's 30 days. I'd hope we get there before that. So I have to bring food and water and mental health for 30 days.
And bring the Christmas turkey just in case.
And just in case I don't make it. So.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Jim, it's a fantastic story. Will you give me details of how people can find you online, please?
Okay, my social media handle or name is Liffey Sailor, as in the River Liffey, LiffeySailor.
Okay.
It's all one word, no spaces. Liffey Sailor. So if you Google that, you'll get me on YouTube, you'll get my blog, or if you go on TikTok, you can TikTok me, and I'm under Liffey Sailor or Class Globe 580.
Fantastic.
That's the way it works.
That's brilliant. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make a note to give you a shout closer to the summertime and just see how you're getting on, if that's okay, because I'd like to just check back with you and see how you are and what progress has been made. Would that be all right?
Not a problem.
Fantastic. A problem. Tell me before you go, Jim, when you told your wife a long, 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 long time ago this might happen, and when you said to her, sweetheart, she knew straight away, of course, there was something wrong.
Something else.
Yeah, what did she say?
Well, she kind of looked at it. It's a case of here we go again, is it? right. Because it's not the first little adventure I've been on, and I think she got used to it. So basically, just don't die and come back for Christmas. That's the bottom line.
And do you have children?
Three children, boy, girl, boy, 25, 23 and 21. So they're kind of self-sufficient, not quite, but nearly self-sufficient. Yeah. And they're egging me on, and they love Dad's on TV, Dad's on TV.
they're actually the same ages as my three, roughly, within a year or so. So I can understand they must think you're either mad or heroic, one or the other. But there you go.
I don't know. Could be both, exactly.
Anyway, Jim Schofield from your garage in Blessington in County Wicklow. We wish you well with it. Fingers crossed for the race and the whole lot. And I suppose a lot of people will envy you because you're doing something that you passionately love and you've wanted to do for a long time. So good luck with it and enjoy every single second of it.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Soft against your skin, soft as the starry night above you. I watch you sleeping, breathing out and breathing in. And deep inside, I know I love you. I whisper your name, but you don't hear me. Then, with a touch that lingers, I straighten your hair with my fingers, and I feel the need to hold you near me. My love for you gets deeper.
the lovely sound of Joe Dolan and a song that I thought might be kind of appropriate. Deeper and Deeper, talking to a man about sailing across the Atlantic. Jim is a great character. I wish him well, and I am looking forward to catching up with him during the summer. Hopefully all will go according to plan, and wouldn't it be lovely if he was able to make that voyage happen and do it all and come home and just have a wonderful Christmas. Yeah, it'd be lovely. Take a break, and just after that I'm going to be introducing the song that was number one in Ireland on this very day back in 1969.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
TRE, your voice in Spain.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. I did say that I would present to you the song that was number one in Ireland on this day back in 1969. How many years ago is that, lads? That's 52 years ago. Wow. And the band that you're going to hear from were put together back in 1968 and came about from tragic circumstances, really. It followed an accident, a road accident, in which several members of a group called the Green Beats were injured. And in fact, one of their members, Paul Williams, died in that accident. Now, the Green Beats called it quits after the accident. But Eddie Campbell, who played guitar, and Dave Pennyfeather on drums, and Keith MacDonald, who played the sax, decided to form another band and set out to find the right musicians, basically to make up this band, which they called The Real McCoy. Peter Barton took over management for the new band, and Eddie had previously played with Engelbert Humperdinck's backing band a number of years previously. The rest of the group were rounded off with Liam McKenna on bass and Kevin McAlay on keyboards, and Mike O'Brien, who was a singer with a band called The Good Times in Dublin. He fronted the band basically as the singer. Anyway, the band played their very first gig in Dunvira in Wexford on July 25th, 1968, heralded as one of the new breed, in inverted commas, of show bands. They didn't use the word show band in their name. Now, show bands, obviously, at that time in Ireland were absolutely huge. The six-piece band, that was a big band at the time, wasn't it, was set and soon established themselves as one of Ireland's first true pop bands. Their first single, I Get So Excited, was released in 1968 and reached number 10 in the Irish charts. A great introduction for any band, I suppose you could say. Following the release of the single, they joined the October 1968 nationwide theatre tour of the Johnny McAvoy Show. Yes, Johnny's still going. And acts like the Cotton Mill Boys, then there were a bluegrass outfit, Maxie, Dick and Twink, and the MacTaggarts were in there as well. However, their second single, Quick Joey Small, was a smash hit, reaching number one just before Christmas in 1968, and it stayed on the charts for 13 weeks. The band were firmly established as one of the top pop bands in the country and went from strength to strength. That song was still there, even though it went into the charts just before Christmas in 1968. It was still there on this day in 1969, and here it is, The Real McCoy, Quick Joey Small.
A quick Joey Small went over the wall with a ball and a chain behind him. A quick Joey Small went over the wall, said a dog are out to find him. In a psych prison suit and no room to move, he headed for the highway with a chain still dragging. He thumbed down a wagon, said, "Hey, mister, you going my way? Let me see you now.
Run, Joey, Joey, run, run. The hounds are on your trail.
Jump up, jump out.
Joey, Joey, run, run, they're gonna send you back to jail.
The sheriff got a shotgun.
He do.
He fill you full of that sun.
It's true.
He even got a blackjack.
He's mad.
He hurt your head in one whack. All right now.
Run, Joey, Joey, run, run. The hounds are on your trail.
My sweet Mary Jane was going insane when she heard about Joey's jailbreak. But she knew all the while, cause she sent him a file
jail.
Sheriff Jack Baines was a man of brains, but he knew one thing for sure. But he took some tut in a pair of handcuffs and hit it straight for Mary Jane's door. Let me see you now.
Run, Joey, Joey, run, run. The hounds are on your trail.
Jump up, jump up.
Run, Joey, Joey, run, run. We're gonna send you back to jail.
A sheriff got a shotgun.
He do.
He fill you full of lead, son.
It's true.
He even got a blackjack.
He's mad.
He heard you hit a one way. All right now.
Run, Joey, Joey, run, run. The hounds are on your trail.
Jump up, jump up.
Run, Joey, Joey, run, run. We're gonna send you back to jail.
Oh, let me see you now.
Run,
I don't have any recollection of playing that on the program previously. It's from The Real McCoy, a song called Quick Joey Small. And that's a song that was at number one in Ireland on this very day back in 1969. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. Indeed. Right, I think what we'll do is take a quick break, come back to me after that, and I'll introduce you to another great story from Patricia Traynor.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
This is TRE.
What, ma'am?
What's that noise?
Nothing, ma'am.
It didn't sound like nothing to me.
Oh, it's just the TV. Ma'am, where'd you keep the glue?
Home insurance from Linea Directa starts from just €98 and comes with It Wasn't Me cover as standard. Don't fret, call Linea Directa on 902 123 616. That's 902 123 616. T's and C's apply.
Hi, Spence Clark here, the Chartered Accountant in Spain since 1985. What a few months we've all had, and for many, a worrying time ahead. If you have questions about your tax or accountancy situation here in Spain, take a look at our website. It's free to look. You might find some answers. But if not, give us a call and we can discuss whatever questions you have. We know how hard these times are, and we want to help. I feel like saying we speak your language, but I think that's been taken. Anyway, don't hesitate. Call Michael Egan on 952-822943 or visit spenceclark.com. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Talk Radio Europe.
Europe. Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back. Just some sports news from Ireland, in case you might be interested in that. I have a hurling and a football story. Brian Cody has been ratified as Kilkenny hurling manager for his 23rd season at a county board meeting on Monday evening. The longest serving inter-county boss in the game. He first took charge in 1999. Wow. And has since delivered 11 All-Ireland crowns. That's fascinating. Kilkenny's last Liam McCarthy Cup arrived back in 2015, which is the longest period that they've gone without tasting All-Ireland success under the 66-year-old. The Cats lifted the Leinster title in 2020, Cody's 16th as manager, before failing at the All-Ireland semi-final stage to Waterford that year. Kilkenny have also confirmed that DJ Carey has left his role as selector, thanking the legendary figure for his contribution to Kilkenny GAA over the past number of years and for his immense contribution to GAA in Kilkenny in broader terms. Martin Comerford and James McGarry will stay on as selectors for 2021, while Comerford will also continue as strength and conditioning coach this year. moving to Irish football, Gaelic football, the Mayo County Board has handed out 3-month suspensions to 3 members of the senior football backroom team who illegally attended the All-Ireland final in December, contravening COVID-19 protocols. According to reports last week, Croke Park officials queried Mayo GAA about the presence of the unaccredited trio inside the stadium for the final after CCTV footage showed them gaining access by a covert method of entry. I wonder what that was. Were they in the boot of a car or something? Anyway, the GAA's restrictions in response to the pandemic meant that 12 members of James Horan's management team were permitted to attend the game, but the additional 3 members gained access without completing the relevant COVID-19 checks. The government made provisions to allow the extended squads attend both the football and hurling All-Ireland finals, though the backroom teams were to remain at 12 strong. At a meeting of Mayo's executive board last Friday, the decision was made to suspend the trio for 3 months. In a statement, the Mayo County Board said that neither they nor manager Horan were aware of the 3 backroom team members managed to attend the game. Mayo GAA has examined the issue for the presence of unaccredited backroom team members at last year's All-Ireland final after it was recently brought to our attention, the statement said, following following a review process, all unaccredited members of the backroom team admitted their mistake, apologised sincerely for their actions and have been suspended for 3 months. These individuals attended the game without the knowledge of the county board officers and the team manager. Mayo GAA would like to place on record our commitment to the GAA and government's COVID-19 guidelines, all of which are in place for the safety and well-being of our players, members and wider community, the statement said. So there you go. Trouble at Mill. Anyway, it was worth a shot, I'd say. I'd say they were thinking, you know what, if Mayo won, wouldn't it be just brilliant? However illegal it is, wouldn't it be just brilliant to be there? Right, that's the Mayo story. Now, Patricia Traynor has great stories. And when I go and visit and record the stories, she kind of has themes to them. And this time round the block that we recorded, she said, I'm going to talk about some people. Well-known people, Irish people. And I said, sure, that's grand, Patricia. So here we go.
Well, hello, Ger. Today I'm going to talk about a man called Clive Staples Lewis, who was born in Belfast in November 1898. And I intend to concentrate really on how his life in Northern Ireland influenced his writing. He's usually referred to as C.S. Lewis, except by his family and friends, who always call him Jack. Now, why? Jack, you may ask. Well, when he was a little boy, he had a dog called Jack, or actually called the dog Jaxie. And sadly, Jaxie was in an accident, was run over by a car and died. Now, Lewis was only 4 at the time, but he was so upset that he said from then on, he wanted to be called Jack and that he wouldn't answer to any other name except Jack. And so for the rest of his life, among his family and friends, he was always Jack. Now, Lewis had a brother, Warren, who was 3 years older than him. But despite the difference in age, both boys were great friends. Lewis always remembers the time when Warren brought into the nursery the lid of a biscuit tin, which he had covered with moss and decorated with flowers and twigs. Now, for Lewis, it was the first time he could appreciate what beauty was. The memory of that moment stayed with him all his life, even though he was very young at the time. And the second glimpse of joy came from reading about Squirrel Nutkin by Beatrix Potter. Although he admits it, and he says it may sound odd, but the fact is from that story, he was enamoured with the idea of autumn. Again, this moment of joy remained with him all his life. And his third glimpse of joy came later through Norse poetry. Both Lewis's parents were bookish people, that is, that their house was full of books. When Lewis was 7, they moved to a very large house which Lewis's father had built. Now, Lewis says his father had been cheated as there were lots of things wrong with that house. However, Lewis says the house actually became a major influence in his story. He says, and I quote, "I am a product of long corridors, empty sunlit rooms, upstairs indoor silences, attics explored in solitude, distant noises of gurgling cisterns and pipes, and the noise of wind under the tiles. But perhaps more important for him was the magnificent view that the house had over Belfast Lough. The boys loved watching the ships move up and down and listening to the ship's horns and delighting in all the marine activity. Lewis says the sound of a steamer's horn at night still conjures up his whole boyhood in Belfast. Lewis's mother fell ill with cancer and died when he was only 10. Now, this was a tragic moment for the family, and Lewis's father was distraught and never really recovered from his loss. The death of their mother brought the two sons together, but distanced them from their father. His nerves had never been steady, and with the death of his wife, he lost control and alienated himself from his sons. And both sons were sent to boarding school in England. It was a stressful moment, and Lewis missed his homeland terribly. When he was asked to write a poem about the most beautiful place he knew, he chose Castle Rock in Derry. But as he couldn't manage to fit the word Castle Rock into the rhyme, he chose Moville, the village just across the bay in Donegal. He always looked forward to returning home for school holidays and for the freedom he felt wandering in the amazing landscapes of the Mourne Mountains. He was a student at Oxford from 1917 to 1920, although he was in the army for a short period during that time. He was wounded in France and was demobilised in 1918, so very short time really. He returned to Oxford and completed his studies, and in 1925 he became a fellow in Magdalen College, where he stayed until 1954. He became friends with Anglo-Saxon expert J.R.R. Tolkien. They discovered they shared many things in common. They had both lost their parents when they were young, and they had both briefly experienced the horrors of the trenches in the First World War. But more important, they were both interested in language, poetry, Norse, and Celtic myths of another world and storytelling. They founded a group called the Inklings, who met every Tuesday in a pub called The Eagle and Child in Oxford to discuss their writing. They remained close friends for many years, although there was also a little touch of rivalry in the later years. Lewis had been baptised in the Church of Ireland at birth, but he lost belief in religion during his teenage years. And it wasn't until he was in Oxford that he experienced a religious reawakening, which had a profound influence on his writing, as can be seen in his famous The Chronicles of Narnia, which is a group really of seven children's books about the fictional world of Narnia. And what I want to point out in this talk is that Lewis got his inspiration from many places in Northern Ireland for this magical world. Lewis had worked as a literary critic, a poet, a Christian apologist, but for children the world over, he will always be remembered as the writer of the famous The Chronicles of Narnia. Children and adults alike have enjoyed his books. The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe was a great favourite of my own children. They were captivated by the idea of an enchanted world whose access was through the door of a wardrobe. Children loved this idea of going into an enchanted world by simply opening the door of a wardrobe. It's easy to see how the countryside of Northern Ireland influenced Lewis's writing. For example, the beautiful castle of the kings and queens of Narnia was called Caer Paravel, and is thought to have been inspired by Dunluce Castle in County Antrim. Anyone who has visited Dunluce Castle will recognise it from the following description of the castle in the book. It was towering up and above them. Before them were the sands with rocks and little pools of salt water and seaweed, and the smell of the sea. A perfect description of Dunluce Castle, and definitely worth a visit. Lewis loved the landscape in Ireland and particularly liked walking in the Mourne Mountains and inhaling its Celtic mythology. His inspiration for Narnia came one day when he and his brother Warren were out walking in Ross Trevor. Lewis turned to his brother and said, "That part of Ross Trevor that looks over Carlingford Lough is my idea of Narnia." And in his essay on stories, he says, I have seen landscapes, notably in the Mourne Mountains, which under a particular light make me feel that at any moment a giant might raise his head over the next ridge. Nature has that in her which compels us to invent giants, and only giants will do. Lewis loved walking in the Mourne Mountains and everything about his homeland. He died on the 22nd of November 1963, and perhaps his death was not given the pride of place in the news that it deserved, because it coincided with the death of two other important people who died that same day. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President of the United States, and the other was Aldous Huxley, the famous author of Brave New World. C.S. Lewis is buried in Oxford. He had spent most of his adult life in Oxford, but his love for the Mourne Mountains in County Down stayed with him always. He wrote in his biography that heaven is Oxford lifted and placed in the middle of County Down.
Ah, lovely. Thank you very much to Patricia Traynor, and we will hear from Patricia again very, very soon. Let's do one more break.
This is Talk Radio Europe.
Is your car automatic? Transmatic are the automatic gearbox specialists on the Costa del Sol. Since 1990, Transmatic have specialised in the repair and servicing of automatic and manual gearboxes. All makes and models from the earliest classics to the latest hybrids. Transmatic undertake other mechanical work by appointment, all with a one-year guarantee. At Transmatic, testing and diagnosis is free. So book your car in for a check before it's too late. Also, Delta Car Rental by Transmatic. Short and long term. Call today 952-796-166 or find us online at transmatic.es.
You're listening to Talk Radio Europe.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
All right, Irish-American former US ambassador to the UN Samantha Power has been nominated by Joe Biden to lead America's foreign aid agency. Power is a former journalist who was appointed to the US National Security Council under President Barack Obama before serving as UN ambassador from 2013 to 2017. In a statement today, President-elect Biden has confirmed that Power is to lead the United States Agency for International Development. That's US aid. The independent agency coordinates foreign aid development from US federal budget and operates in over 100 countries worldwide. Samantha Power is a world-renowned voice of conscience and moral clarity, challenging and rallying the international community to stand up for the dignity and humanity of all people, Mr. Biden said today or yesterday in a statement. Born in Dublin, Power moving to the US as a child and has returned to Ireland on many occasions in recent years to speak about her work. Joe Biden's nomination of Power to a senior position follows the nomination of the Irish-American Marty Walsh to the position of Labour Secretary in the new administration. Introducing Marty Walsh at a press conference in Delaware last week, Joe Biden joked that the only downside to nominating his good friend was that his parents were not from Mayo, they were from Galway. Ah, well, there you go. The old rivalry, huh? Time for one more song from our featured artist, and this time we're going to take a song called Sarah.
Everything seems so right.
song was written about his daughter, wasn't it? Phil Lynott, or Phil Lynott, and Thin Lizzy, and a song called Sarah. That's taken us back a fair few years now, so it is. Right, and I sincerely hope that Giles Brown was listening to the programme today, because it was he suggested that we would feature Thin Lizzy. And what am I going to feature next week? The Pogues. Yeah, somebody asked me to, a chap called Alan asked me if I'd feature Mr. McGowan and the Pogues. So yeah, we'll do that next week, I think. All right. I think that's about the end of it, isn't it? That's about all we have for you today on the programme. I sincerely hope that you enjoyed it. Can I say a big thank you to Jim Schofield for taking time away from his boat that he's building to go across the Atlantic on his own. Brave man. To talk to us on the programme this evening. Can I say a special thank you as well to Patricia Trainer, one of our regular contributors. And of course, I have to say a big thank you and a big hello to my good friend, and indeed your good friend as well, Jose Antonio Sierra, our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor on the programme. Looking forward to your company again next week. If there's something you'd like me to include, or if you would like to pass on a comment, or you would like to ask me to do something, give me a shout on the email at ger@tre.radio. I'm back on the wireless tomorrow. The wireless, God knows, huh? Tomorrow between 4 and 6 for the daily, because Dave Hodgson is filling in for Hannah on Daybreak between 8 and 10 each morning this week. So I'm back tomorrow on the daily covering that shift. Now we have Bill Padley then from 10 o'clock until 12 tomorrow, 12 to 1 as per usual. Stephen Ritson will be here 1 to 3 at Selena with the Lifestyle Programme, and then from 3 to 4 you have Bob James with Spain Today. So that's everything that you have right there. Alrighty, okay. It's been 3 hours today now. I hope that it wasn't too much for you. I've enjoyed every single second of it. We've got our news on the way at the top of the hour, and after that there's plenty more to keep you entertained and enthralled. So do please keep it here on Talk Radio Europe if you get a chance. Alright, if you missed anything, you can catch it on our catch up at tre.radio. From me, Ger Sweeney, until we see you soon, bye bye.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.